This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the facially unrecognisable voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Matt, how are you?
I'm not too bad, mate. I was going to start this with the forgetful voice of goalkeeping, but I'm pretty sure we've done that already. So I had to think of something else. This is a bit of a sign of the times for you, Richard.
It's concerning because I think this could be quite a regular name that you give me, forgetful. So, yeah, quite embarrassed by this story, really. I mean, I'm still considering whether I do share this or not because I do think I'll be judged.
Well, we've come too far now, so please tell us a story. We had the fish kissing, fish biting incident from last week. I don't know if this is a better story, and I actually know this one before you're going to tell it. So the beauty of you telling the story to me for the first time is not happening, but to our listeners, it is.
True. By the way, thanks to all those that made contact in regards to the fish story. Like, I'm glad that really tickled me. No one ever mentions anything about all the goalkeeping analysis we do, apparently. So I really appreciate that. All right, here's the story. This was about a week ago. I was playing golf. Okay, so I try and play on a Saturday morning. That's kind of turned into a bit of a thing, you know, long, hard week, and then go out and play a game of golf on a Saturday. Anyway, the place that I play, normally if you go on your own, they'll then place you with three other members. So that's what we did, and it was a competition. So, you know, great fun, lots of people playing it. So they placed me in this four ball, and the round was, it was quite slow, actually. It was probably about 5 hours that I went round. Really nice people, chatting away the whole way around. Anyway, we finished the game. Everyone then goes in the bar, and there's a good 30 people in the bar that have finished and obviously waiting for a few more to finish. Anyway, it was mainly men. There was a few ladies there, and one of the ladies actually came up to me. And we were chatting away. She's really nice. She was saying about how her husband was currently playing. She was just waiting on him to finish, and then they were going to have a day in the bar. And she was telling about her daughter and this, that, the other. And so just making conversation, I've said to her, well, why don't you get yourself out on the golf course? At which point she fell silent, looked at me, and she said, are you kidding me? And I had no idea what was going on. She then says, I've literally just played a round with you. She was in my four ball for 5 hours. And I've asked her after the round whether she plays golf. And then it was the worst thing was about the situation was that lots of other people were listening in. So you could imagine, like, everyone was just like, oh my God, what have you just done? So then I've spent about the next hour trying to make it up to her. And it just, I don't know how you can kind of recover from that. I was in such a deep hole.
Are you that self-involved, Richard Lee, that you couldn't even see someone you were playing golf with? Unbelievable. Mate, you are unbelievable. It's a disgrace. You should be ashamed of yourself.
Do you know, the only excuse I've got is that when she was playing golf, she was wearing a cap and obviously looked very different to the lady I then saw an hour later, who'd obviously gone into the changing rooms, freshened herself up, and was then waiting for her husband, who doesn't play with her, apparently. He plays in like a later group for whatever reason, wants to be with his mates and what have you. So I just didn't put two and two together. And the way she was talking was almost like she had appeared and was just waiting for her husband to finish so that she could then join. So my brain just wasn't working at all. And it was so embarrassing because then I'm like,
what did you do?
Yeah, again, what did you say?
What
did you say in that situation? I've already said it. I can't rewind. I would have loved to have. Why am I even asking that question? That's the point as well. Why am I? Okay, I'm trying to be polite, make conversation, but why am I asking that question? You know, it was a tough moment, really tough moment.
That's a good point. Are you really that bothered? I'm sure she's a lovely lady and has a lovely husband, but are you really that bothered if she gets herself out on the golf course?
Well, this is it. I mean, I am because, you know, of course, making conversation and just who knows where the conversation might lead.
Small talk.
Et cetera. Yeah, no, look, small talk's important because what can start off with small talk can then lead to some interesting subjects. So it was just kind of continuing the conversation. But the big lesson I've learned through all this is just keep things vague. Just keep them really, really vague. You know, I could have just asked her what she does in her spare time. And then she might have said, oh, well, obviously I play golf, like I have just done with you for the last 5 hours. And then I'd have been like, oh, and it would have twigged. But instead, I've gone for such a precise question.
So what did happen then? What was the end result of all of this?
Well, no, she was really nice. She then, you could tell she was a little bit, what's the word I'd use? Probably taken aback. But she was really, she was okay about it. And then I tried to sort of dig myself out, kind of saying, you look so different. But then I think that probably just made things worse. Then I tried to say about my concussions in football. I told her about my football career. I used that as a reason. I said, look, maybe I'm getting like early onset dementia. Then I started talking about the problem with dementia in football. I mean, I went down all sorts of routes just to try and dig myself out.
Always bring it back to goalkeeping. Always bring it back.
I tried everything because I had nothing in that moment. But no, we ended up speaking for a long time. And I'd like to think that by the end of the day, I was forgiven. But I mean, saying that, I'm sure I'm going to be playing golf again this weekend. I'll probably see her again. So we'll soon see. I think she's quite well known at the golf club. She's quite like an influential member. So if I suddenly see that my membership's been revoked, then I know why.
Good stuff. Okay, well, we are going to try and make this as short and as possibly sharp as we can because pre-season, I suppose, has already started. We are in the close season and discussions are happening across the board throughout the world of football, Richard, in terms of who is going where in the goalkeeping world. So we're going to touch on that in this Between the Sticks. We're also going to do something just slightly different. There wasn't too much action. Some of the games were dead rubbers, of course. So we're just going to reflect and predict, really, what might happen in the goalkeeping world for the Premier League teams and then look at the Championship, the League One and the League Two playoffs. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Okay, starting, of course, in the Premier League at Goodison, where Everton survived by the skin of their teeth, beating Bournemouth 1-0. Mark Travers in for Neto on this one. Good saves from Idrissa Gueye, James Garner and Damari Gray from him. Of course, we normally see this final day of the season, final few days of the season where a goalkeeper comes in. Jordan Pickford as well. I think it's fair to say Jordan Pickford, he's just a bit of a nutter, isn't he? Mm. We saw his little interaction with Dominic Solanke. You've just got to love him. That's the perfect game for Jordan Pickford.
I'd have to agree. I know we say this a lot and I know we're repeating ourselves when it comes to Jordan Pickford, but he does show up for the big games. You know, he always has done. It's one of them. And I think because of his mentality being what it is and maybe the antics and whatever else that people might talk about with Jordan Pickford, when it comes to those big games, he's not the type that's ever going to get nervous. And if anything, it does seem to really make him tune in even more. And I thought he played well, made a really good save to his right hand side that he scooped away and then obviously got himself in that little altercation. Solid save to his left, which, again, I hate to use a phrase that a pundit would use, but it was a save you'd expect him to make, but it was very well done, you know, to his left-hand side.
Not said by the pundits, though, because again, I mean, I guess this is a greater debate. It's classic, isn't it? Because of the impact of the save, the timing of the save, the importance of the game. Suddenly, that's a super stop from Jordan Pickford.
Yeah, whereas if that happens in any regular game, it's a good save. Yeah, he's moved well to his left, got two hands to it, didn't have to go full stretch and parried it into a good area. You know, he's executed the technique very well, but you're right, when the pressure is on and when the pundits are getting so excited, then naturally it elevates the difficulty of the save. But as I say, look, and in those moments, what I would say is I've been there myself and it's certainly games like that are very interesting, like what it can do to you mentally going into them. And as I say, for however he does it, Jordan Pickford, when it comes to those big games, he does seem to be energised by them.
So the first of our rundown then, Everton and Bournemouth, how are things looking in the goalkeeping landscape into the summer for them?
Yeah, I think interesting for both teams. I guess if you look at it, you know, realistically, nothing will happen with Jordan Pickford, I wouldn't expect. And then you've got, in terms of Asmir Begovic, as the two there, I guess there'll be some thought as to what happens there, whether he stays, whether he moves on. You've then got, obviously, at Bournemouth, you watch Mark Travers play, and you mentioned he did play well, made a couple of top saves up to his right-hand side, looked very confident, certainly, you know, looked like he was relishing the challenge. And that'll be an interesting situation, because I don't think if I'm Mark Travers, I'd want to stay as a two, certainly at the age he's at. You know, he's built a bit of a name for himself now. He's had a taste of it. So I would expect him, given that it's unlikely to happen at Bournemouth, I wouldn't expect anything to change with Neto. I do expect him to go somewhere to get football. So that, again, could open up a slot at Bournemouth.
Over to St Mary's, Southampton 4, Liverpool 4. Quite the final day bonanza here between these two clubs. Alex McCarthy still in for Southampton ahead of Gavin Batsuna. A good save from Mo Salah to prevent Liverpool probably winning this one. And Quevin Kelleher in for Alisson as well. Adrian on the bench for Liverpool. Did okay, I think, in this game. Not one of his better performances, but this is an intriguing case, isn't it? What next for Quevin Kelleher?
Yeah, I think both of these teams have got interesting situations when it comes to the goalkeeping department, and for similar-ish reasons, really. And you've obviously got Gavin Batsunu at Southampton. They're going down to the Championship. Of course, they spent a lot of money on him. He's very much the asset, and you'd think the number one moving forward. So I would expect him to start in the Championship, but then you've got the question as to whether Alex McCarthy stays as a two in the Championship, or is he, again, that sort of perfect profile to go in as a two in the Premier League, potentially? So I wouldn't be surprised if there's some sort of movement there, certainly. And then I think in terms of Liverpool, it does all depend on Kelleher, really. Again, similar conversation to what we just had in regards to Mark Travers. He's at an age where he's going to want to really build that CV. You know, he's done well whenever he stepped in on the whole and certainly shown what he's capable of. But I do think there has to come that point that he has to go and get that game time. Of course, it's not as simple as that because Liverpool have a certain valuation of him, and whether someone's going to come in and match that, I guess that will be the question.
This happens sometimes at clubs, doesn't it, where you have two goalkeepers who are really effectively number ones, and you have to make an executive. Manchester United, I suppose, have been in that position for quite a while with David De Gea and Dean Henderson, and that's got to a situation which is almost unsavoury to an extent. At Liverpool, of course, it's remained harmonious. But like you say, at some point, someone has to rip the plaster off and make a decision.
Yeah, well, what you tend to find is that, I'm trying to think of a good example. Another good example might be Blackburn at the moment, where you have your set 1-2-3, and then suddenly when the two becomes the one, it doesn't really work anymore because naturally the expectation levels of those two players involved in that has shifted. You know, the one that's then become a two doesn't want to be a two. The two that has become the one doesn't want to return to being a two. So ultimately, ordinarily, one has to move on to make it work. I guess it's slightly different in Kelleher's case in that he has always been the two, but then it is a case of, you know, he's getting to an age now where he's going to want to really establish himself somewhere. Now, of course, he'd love for that to be at Liverpool, but, you know, Alisson's had another top season. Don't see anything changing there. You wouldn't expect anything to change there. So with that being the case, is it a case that he moves on a perm? Do they potentially open him up for a loan opportunity, which they haven't done to this point? So, yeah, it will be really intriguing.
At the Emirates, Arsenal thumped Wolves by 5-0. Jose Sarr with a lovely stop, actually, from Leandro Trossard in that one. Bit of a last-day slip, I think you can call it, from Jakub Kivior. It's 12 conceded in his last three games for Jose Sarr. Not the greatest finish to a season, with Dan Bentley, of course, coming in for a couple of those games towards the end of the season and doing well, too. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there. Also with Arsenal, Aaron Ramsdale and Matt Turner, who came in and really hasn't had too much game time apart from the odd outing in Europe.
Yeah, again, both really interesting goalkeeping situations because certainly, like you mentioned, Dan Bentley came in, did well. Jose Sarr, I think he would, you know, by his own admission, it's not been his finest season on the whole. He's had, I suppose, a few games that haven't necessarily gone his way. And in this one, it was a really disappointing fifth goal. I know the game was over at that point, but a tricky one in that it's just pitched in front of him. You could see he was then a little bit undecided as to whether to hold it or to parry it. He had people following in. So it's one of them that ideally, you know, claps down to your left and try and bring it in, but he wasn't able to do so. And it, yeah, looked very untidy in the end. If it is those two going into next season, I think it'll be a really interesting decision as to who starts. I guess there is then the possibility as to whether they'll move one on. If they did, of course, it wouldn't be a Dan Bentley having brought him in so recently. So that's certainly one for us to keep an eye on. And then in regards to Arsenal, you just touched on it there. It's a similar situation that we're talking about previously, really, where this idea that you bring in someone like a Matt Turner, who's USA's number one, obviously played a lot of games in the MLS. Is he going there just to be a two for the next few years? I don't think so. You know, you can do it for a season or two, and then I think every goalkeeper gets to a point when they have to play again, you know, and certainly when they're that age. I think it's a bit different if you're bringing in a 35-year-old and it's their last gig. They might do it for 2-3 years and be happy doing it. But I think when you're that bit younger and he's still playing international football, there will come a point where he's keen to go and play. Now, again, it's not as easy as that. I keep saying that. And of course, you've then got transfer fees involved and salaries involved and what Arsenal want to do, what the goalkeeper wants to do, etc. But as it stands, my guess is it stays the same. But it, at the same time, it wouldn't surprise me if there were some movement in terms of Matt Turner.
Chelsea 1, Newcastle 1. Martin Dubravka in with Nick Pope injured. A nice slow motion stop almost from a mixture, I think, of Raheem Sterling and Sven Botman. And here we have two clubs again, which is interesting to see what's going to happen. You've got Kepa, you've got Edouard Mendy at Chelsea, and you've got Nick Pope as the number one at Newcastle. Dubravka and Carl Darlow as well, both at the club, both with long contracts too. I think they don't run out until the summer of 2025, I think. So again, interesting to see what's going to happen there, especially as Dubravka kind of half expected to be a Manchester United player by this point.
Yeah, in terms of the game, I actually went to this game, Matt. I don't know if I told you that, but I did actually go to this game.
No, you didn't.
I was there, Stamford Bridge. Haven't been for a long time, but thoroughly enjoyed it. And in fairness, both goalkeepers, I thought, played well. Certainly no chance on the goals. And I thought, yeah, distribution and other bits that they did in the game, I thought they were very solid. A couple of good stops, as you mentioned, from Dubravka. I did enjoy the one that was almost like a slow motion. I mean, it made such a good save prior to that. And I feel like I've done this normally in training, not in games, where it's up to your right hand side. And you could maybe take a couple of steps and collapse on it, but you kind of wait and just glide through the air and hold it. It looks very, very good, very athletic. But yeah, two really interesting situations again, because I think, going back to what we said about having the two number ones, of course, Chelsea effectively had that. It's just been interesting how that one's played out, with Kepa coming in for such a large amount of money as the one, Mendy then being brought in as the one. Obviously, the shift has now happened again back the other way. It's been a tough season for Mendy for one reason or another, obviously injuries and limited game time. So you feel that one will move on. It's just which one. And then when they do, then no doubt Chelsea will look to bring someone in, whether they bring in a two or a one. I guess that will be interesting, given the amount of money they've got now. Do they potentially go, you know, all out and try and bring in a really high-profile one? But it, again, we keep using the word interesting. It's just the fact that they've spent so much on Mendy and Kepa. You know, do they go and do that again for another goalkeeper? That will certainly be a situation to keep an eye on. And then Newcastle, similarly, like you say, they've got so many goalkeepers. A lot of Karius there as well, of course. You know, you'd expect Karius to move on at this point. What happens with Dubravka and Darlow? Again, Darlow, I get the impression, would be very keen to play, so I'd expect him to move on. It is just whether Dubravka's happy to be the two there, because you'd like to think there'd be comfortable enough with him in that role. You know, he's certainly a very good replacement to step in. And he is that little bit older than a couple of the other profiles that we're talking about. So it is just a case of, is he happy playing that role? If not, then it's, where is that slot to become a number one? And it's always a bit difficult when you haven't got that much recent game time.
Selhurst Park, it was Crystal Palace 1, Nottingham Forest 1. Wayne Hennessy in for Keylor Navas for Forest. Nice to see George Shelvey on the bench for Nottingham Forest 2. And again, two clubs, we keep saying it, interesting, intriguing as to what might happen next season.
Yeah, I feel like I need to use a different word, because I've probably said the word interesting about 17 times.
Terrible diction. Yeah. Awful diction.
Go on, what other words you've got for me? You are a human thesaurus.
You like to use fascinating.
Fascinating, yeah, that's good. That's good. Okay, we'll go with fascinating. Well, look, it's a fascinating situation at both these clubs. You've got, look, Forest, obviously, you would get the impression that they will be bringing in a one, whether that is a Dean Henderson. Obviously, they've got Wayne Hennessy there, who you think would be a two. Do they bring in another one as a 2/3 as well? So I can see quite a bit of movement at Forest. And similarly, a fascinating situation at Palace, because, of course, Sam Johnson has now claimed that number one spot. And it's been Guaita's for so long. He has been so solid. But you would now fully expect Sam Johnson to be the one going into next season. Does Guaita stay as a two? Is he happy in that role? If not, then he might move on. Of course, they've got Jack Butland, who's been on loan at Man United too. Lots of rumours in the paper as to where he might be going this season. Certainly doesn't sound like he'll be going back to Palace. Remy Matthews has been on loan in the SPL and has done well. Does he return as a three? He might not necessarily want to do that now that he's gone and done what he's done in the SPL. So again, I can see quite a bit of movement happening there. I guess the question is, do enough goalkeepers move on to then potentially open up a space to bring in a new goalkeeper? Or is it as simple as they'll go with a Sam Johnson one, Guaita two, and of course they've got Joe Whitworth and Owen Goodman, younger goalkeepers that are coming through and highly rated as their three.
And finally, Manchester United 2, Fulham 1. And Richard, there is a curious situation at Old Trafford in the goalkeeping department with David De Gea, with Dean Henderson, like you said, Jack Butland there. You've got Tom Heaton as the number two, number three as well. And De Gea in this game made a very good penalty save from Alexander Mitrovic. A good tip over from Tom Kearney too, which wasn't picked up by the referee. A goal kick given, but he collected his golden glove at the end and said himself, I'm quite happy with my season. I've had a good one.
Yes, indeed. You know what? I'd describe this situation at Manchester United as compelling, Matthew. Compelling.
Okay, I like it.
Yeah, so David De Gea, really interesting. I mean, it's interesting because I feel like we talk about him on the pod probably more than any other goalkeeper, but I think that's largely down to the fact that he gets more column inches than any other goalkeeper, it feels like. And, you know, good, bad, indifferent in terms of what people think of him. But again, you look at the, look at the stats in terms of what he's achieved again. And on the whole, I think, you know, naturally he's pleased with the season and rightly so. You would then expect him, if he does sign this new contract, which seems to have been going on forever, I think we're still going to be talking about this next season, even when he's out of contract and still seemingly playing. But again, there is obviously a lot of doubt surrounding that. So that will be key as to how this plays out. But then you do think if he stays, realistically, he stays as the one. And naturally, they'll look to bring someone in to really challenge. Now, whether that's Dean Henderson coming back, that seems very unlikely, you'd think. So if that is the case that he does move on, then who is it that comes in and seriously challenges him? Now, it does feel, and this is always the case of this time of the season, certainly when it comes to Manchester United, they're being linked with every goalkeeper under the sun. So I'm sure in the next week or two, we'll get a bit more clarity as to who's to come in there and fill that slot. And then in regards to Fulham, I think that, you know, Leno's had a top season, really, really top season, probably hasn't received the press coverage that he deserves. But to some extent, that's a compliment to him as well, that you know, very rarely have we flagged him for anything that maybe wasn't quite so good, or the press flagged him at all, really. I think he's been excellent throughout. The big question there is, again, similar situation to what we spoke of previously, Marek Rodak. He's got a couple of promotions to the Premier League, but hasn't really been given his chance in the Premier League. Does he decide that now is the time that he moves on to once again be the number one?
Lovely stuff. Okay, let's just quickly sift through the rest of the Premier League clubs to finish your rundown, Richard. We'll start with Brentford. They beat Manchester City at the weekend, and I guess an inevitable situation here, especially with Mark Flecken coming in as the first arrival of the summer. That was 11 million from Freiburg going into Brentford. It looks like David Raya, who was in most people's team of the season, Opta's team of the season at that, most saves this season, highest save percentage this season, the most long passes of any goalkeeper in the Premier League since 2018-19. In fact, who was that previously, Richard, who held that record?
Well, for the most long passes? 2018-2019 will be Nick Pope.
Jonas Lersel, yes, of Huddersfield Town.
There you go.
Yes, but Brentford, David Raya, what's going to happen there? And Manchester City, I would imagine nothing too much will happen there.
Yeah, don't expect anything to happen at City. Obviously, the fact that Scott Carson has recently signed another contract, so you'd expect the 1-2-3 to stay the same. You've just got Zach Steffen, of course, who's on loan at Middlesbrough, so you would think that he would move on, again, whether that's on a permanent or on another loan. And then in regards to Brentford, yeah, they've, you know, certainly with, it very much follows Brentford's model that with David Raya going into the last year of his contract, they wouldn't be keen for that to happen and lose him on a free. They're very much about bringing players in that they can build and move on for a profit. And certainly it's been perfect for David Raya and perfect for Brentford if he does move on now. The big question is, where does he go? Again, being linked with every different club in the Premier League. But I do expect him to get a top club, certainly a top six club, you would think, on the back of the season he's had with Brentford. Flecken coming in, not a goalkeeper I know a great deal about, but I'm always intrigued by Brentford signings just because of the way in which they do it, when it's very much stats-based and they've got their own models as to how they look at goalkeepers in particular. So I'm expecting big things from Flecken, so I'm looking forward to seeing him play. They might look to do a two. Of course, I haven't had Strakosha for all that long, but we haven't really seen anything of him. So again, I guess it's just depending on whether he's happy to remain in that role or whether he's keen to move on.
Thought-provoking scenes at Villa Park. Villa beat Brighton 2-1 on the final day, but I've got three names for you here, Richard. We've got Emi Martinez. What's going to happen with him, and what will happen in the situation with Jason Steele and Robert Sanchez at Brighton?
Again, you'd think that with Jason Steele having done as well as he has, that he may well be given a chance to be a number one going into next season. You know, that you feel would be right. Certainly, they've had a great run with him in the team. He certainly fits the style of play very well. If that is the case, then you can't see Rob Sanchez being a two there. You know, he's been so solid and so strong for so long that you do think that he will move on. Again, what do Brighton then do? Do they then bring in someone to challenge Steele? I could see that, certainly. And in regards to Villa, it's, again, all up in the air, really. It could be one where it stays exactly the same. The one thing that will change is, of course, Jed Steer will move on this summer, so you get the impression they might look to bring in a three. It's just then whether Olsen stays and Martinez. And look, Martinez will have interest this summer, I'm sure. You know, he's been, obviously, with the World Cup under his belt, and he's been very, very solid again for Villa this season. They've had an excellent season, and I guess it is just that question. If a bid comes in that's big enough and interesting enough to Martinez, then, you know, I certainly wouldn't be surprised if he did move on. But at the same time, I feel like he's in a very good spot at Villa.
Leeds 1, Tottenham 4. Leeds going out of the Premier League, and Spurs finishing well. Hugo Lloris not in the side, of course. He's been injured for a while. It might be that he moves on in the summer. You've got Fraser Forster, who played the last few games. You've got Brandon Austin as well, who's been on the bench for the last few games.
Yes, Spurs and Leeds. Do you know what I would describe this as, Matthew?
Go on.
Riveting. Riveting. That's what I'm going to go with. So, yeah, look, I think with Spurs, as you mentioned, I think it might be time that Hugo Lloris does move on. Certainly, it's been a tough season for him with injury. I know that he's had the odd critic, a lot of it unfairly, I must say, but you do feel like now is that time. I know David Raya has been heavily linked to Spurs, which you could certainly see as a fit. I don't expect Fraser Forster to go anywhere, but again, you know, it all depends on who the new manager is, what style of play the manager wants to play, etc. So at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if it was a new one and two and Fraser Forster potentially did go to a different club. And then in regards to Leeds, obviously the relegation could potentially change everything, you know, because it's one that Melier obviously played as many games he has now in the Premier League. Has he got enough asset value that, and certainly still so young, that they can then move him on for a lot of money? Does Robles stay? I'm not so sure. So again, another team that could need a one and two.
And finally, Leicester 2, West Ham 1. The former going down to the Championship, which I think means that Dan Iverson will probably remain as the number one for Leicester. You've got Danny Ward there. You've got Alex Smithies there doing his thing as the two and the three. And then with West Ham, Lukas Fabianski just keeps rolling on.
Yeah, well, these two situations have me spellbound. They do, spellbound. I feel like I'm doing a spelling contest. Just keep repeating myself. No, look, I think that similar to what we just said with Leeds, obviously, how does it change things for Leicester? I do think that Iverson, of course, he's played so many games in the champ already. You feel like that's the obvious fit, that he stays in that role. Does Danny Ward stay? Possibly not. Again, it's been a real strange season for Danny Ward because I know it started... it was a tough season to start, certainly, and then he had a number of very good games. So does he then get a move back to the Prem? Again, it's always difficult when you're coming from a relegated team. Does he go elsewhere in the champ as a number one? And then in regards to West Ham, I don't think they do anything. You know, it seems like year after year, people always ask whether Fabianski, if it's the last year, it's the last year. But again, from the games I've seen, I think he's been very consistent. I get the impression that West Ham are happy with him. There might be a question mark in regards to Areola because you feel at some point you always felt like the transition would happen and that Areola would become the number one. So does it just stay the same and maybe that transition happens next season? That would be my guess. But at the same time, I say this, and if Areola's in a position where he's like, enough's enough, I need to go and play, then of course that could force the situation that bit sooner.
So let's just whiz through the playoffs, starting in the Championship, where it was Coventry 1, Luton 1. Luton winning 6-5 on penalties. Gutted for Ben Wilson, really. The fairy tale didn't quite happen for him, but it did for Ethan Horvath. Quite the season for him on loan from Nottingham Forest. From watching this, and we've seen Ethan Horvath quite a lot, and I have to say I felt this every time I've seen him. He's not the most expressive goalkeeper in the world. Certainly when he's playing, there was some emotion after the game, after the penalties had been won, but he just seems quite, not blank, I don't want it to sound as crass as that, but he's quite, gosh, what's the best way to describe this? I don't mean he's vacant, he's got like a neutral expression, yeah, when he's playing.
Do you know, that's something I learned in psychology. It's by putting the word not in front of it, it doesn't necessarily change.
Yeah.
Like Matt, I'm not saying you're an idiot. Okay, I'm just saying that, you know, and you're like, well, you're basically telling me I'm an idiot. So yeah, you're saying he looks vacant. That's fine. Just say how it is. No, do you know what? It is poker face, isn't it? It is one where he doesn't give a lot away, whether it's good, bad, indifferent. I don't mind that. And certainly internally, if you can be like that during a game, that's key. You know, you see it so often where a goalkeeper makes a fantastic save and then they're lost for a minute or two because they're, you know, emotionally they're on such a high, and similarly makes a bad mistake and they go make another one because again they're not necessarily in their best possible state, where you get the impression with him it's really hard to tell what state he's in. Happy, sad, angry, could be all of them at the same time.
He looked a bit crocked as well going into those penalties. You did think for a moment, are they going to make a massive decision here and bring on James Shea just for the shootout? Not because James Shea is technically better than Horvath at saving penalties, but just because Horvath didn't look that agile at that moment in time.
Yeah, it was a big call, and it was, I suppose it was interesting the fact that there wasn't a penalty saved out of the 12 penalties that were taken. Of course, it was a miss that meant that Luton were promoted. But you do wonder, had they have lost that, whether that might have been brought up again. The fact they won, then it wasn't brought up. And the bit with Horvath, I suppose you have got, is he is, you know, he's a big figure. He's obviously, in terms of physically, you look at him, he's got a certain aura about him. So, you know, even that, when it comes to penalties, It's going to have a bit of an impact on the takers. And also, I do think, and we talk about this a lot, we see it quite often now, don't we? Goalkeepers coming on for penalties. Like, I would have hated that if I was a goalkeeper that played 120 minutes and did well. Even if I had a bit of an injury, I still would have wanted the opportunity to see it through, because I think, you know, unless the injury is really, really bad, you know, the adrenaline's flowing, you'll always find a way to get through it.
In League One, Barnsley 0, Sheffield Wednesday 1, with the last kick of the game going into the Championship, or the last head of the game. Just like you feel for Ben Wilson, you feel for Harry Eisted. Such a good performance from him. A couple of saves from Michael Smith in the first and the second half. The second one of those was exceptional. Really good save from Barry Bannon in extra time too. I really like Harry Eisted. I think he's a really neat and tidy goalkeeper. I'd like to see him move on, really, in the summer and get game time, just like he had towards the end of this campaign.
Well, huge credit to him, because I think certainly being at Luton for as long as he has and not necessarily getting the amount of game time that he would have wanted there. He's had to go into non-league to get games when he was able to go on loan. And you do wonder, you see so many stories like that, and eventually they'll leave a Luton and maybe go down into to League Two or maybe even the National League, and we don't see them again on a higher stage. But I think with what he's done this season, to go to the level that he has and shown just how good he is, obviously keeping Brad Collins out the side for starters, huge, huge credit to him. And I thought for this game, yeah, he really stepped up. A couple of brilliant saves, looked really sharp throughout. I have to mention Cameron Dawson's save as well. I thought that's one. It's one of those classic ones that if it goes in, the commentators would have questioned him because it's his near post. But you actually look at the shot, it could not have been struck any better. Going in that top corner, and he gets that hand up so quick, makes a brilliant save. And then in terms of Harry Eisted, certainly the one where he's read the situation perfectly, at the angle of his dive, where the ball's being hooked into what should just be an empty net, but the angle of his dive, attacking the ball, getting a hand on it, top, top save.
And finally, in League Two, Carlisle 1, Stockport 1, Carlisle winning 5-4 on penalties. But before we get on to the game, Richard, I'd like to just state that I'm a disgrace. I'm an absolute disgrace. I'm disgusted with myself, and you might be a disgrace too. It depends.
Okay, go on.
Who's the goalkeeper for Stockport?
It's Ben Hinchcliffe.
Say his name again.
Ben Hinchcliffe.
Right, that's not his name.
Really?
That's not his name. And we've been saying it over and over again on this podcast. His name is Ben Hinchcliffe, not Hinchcliffe.
Really?
How absolutely unbelievably disgraceful is that from both you and I? And I think, to be fair, a lot of other commentators have been referring to him, not that we're commentators, but people have been referring to him as Ben Hinchcliffe. It's Hinchcliffe, and I cannot believe I've not noticed that. It wasn't until I was watching the game and the commentator actually said, by the way, we need to make sure that it is Hinchcliffe and not Hinchcliffe, we call him Hinchcliffe. I was like, why? Oh my goodness, that's his name. There's no C in between the hinch and the lift. It's Hinchcliffe.
It's like one of those optical illusions, isn't it? Or when you read a sentence, it's like, how many F's are in this sentence? You have a look through and then you realise you haven't counted the F's from the word of, you know? Because again, it's your mind just doesn't pick these things up. I could have looked at, you could have sent it through to me and said, Rich, read this name, and I would have said Ben Hinchcliffe. So yeah, look, I wholeheartedly apologise.
Yes, we do wholeheartedly apologise. And our campaign to get him on this podcast hasn't been helped with the fact that we've been calling him the wrong name this whole time. So what we will do is big him up again, because he was so good again, so good aerially throughout, I thought, in this one. A really good save from Christian Dennis. Might have been in extra time, that one, the header, which he knew as well. You could tell that he knew he'd made a cracking save. It reminded me, I don't know whether you thought the same, of the Joe Hart save that he made for England. I think it might have been against Serbia. I don't know. It was the first game, I think, of Sam Allardyce's one-game reign as England manager. He made that save from the corner, the header, where he just flew up into his left-hand side and palmed it onto the bar and managed to keep it out. I thought it was, yeah, a bit like that one.
Yeah, do you know what? I would agree. It's very similar, actually. And it's that, for me, was the reading of the game, you know, as well. Because you take your position from the corner. The moment it's whipped to the near post, he's taken a step forwards, which, again, each moment in time during a game of football, there is an optimum position for you to be in. He's read the situation in that there is then the risk of it being flicked towards the near post. And then the reaction to then get there, as you say, very similar to the Joe Hart save, to get there, to claw it out, and even at the angle of your hand, making sure that it doesn't cross the line. I just thought the reactions, the movement, very, very good.
And Tomasoli, a good save from Jack Stretton in this one. A penalty save too. He was quick to state, I'm not the hero, it's the rest of the guys. don't call me the hero. But I think interestingly here, as was the case in the championship playoff final too, was that Thomas Holy was very quick to retrieve the ball every time a penalty had been taken and then handing it to his player in order to give them their control over their penalty prep. Ethan Horvath did exactly the same, as did Ben Wilson for Coventry.
Yeah, we're seeing this more and more, which, and again, this would have been from obviously several situations in the past where you're always looking for any opportunity you can in order to get that slight advantage. And I think it's a small detail, but certainly I think goalkeepers that are playing in penalty shootouts, it's always a nice thing you can do to allow, as you mentioned, each player to have full control.
Okay, Richard, that is us pretty much done. But before we go, we just wanted to quickly send our thoughts firstly to Sergio Rico and his family. Sergio is in a serious condition in intensive care after a horse riding accident, his club PSG said just a few days ago. That happened in his native Spain. So stay strong, boss. Thinking of you very much here. And also stay strong to a young lad, a 13-year-old called Austin. This was on Grassroots Football UK on Facebook. And a message from Austin's parents was posted where they said he has loved football since he was six. He's 13 years old now. But sadly, on Sunday, he came off halfway through his game after taking a few blows to the head. When he got home, he lost use of his right-hand side and was rushed to hospital. He's been in intensive care since, and it's been confirmed he suffered a stroke. He faces the biggest fight of his life. His parents said he's currently in Adam Brooks Hospital receiving the best care possible. So Austin, if you're listening, stay strong to you too. We're thinking of you here at the Goalkeepers Union podcast, aren't we, Richard?
We would indeed.
And for you, what's happening right now? We are going into pre-season, into the summer, so I'm guessing it's all busy, busy, busy.
It is, yep. So a lot of the players obviously on their summer breaks here, there and everywhere, but certainly in the agency world, there's lots of conversations at the moment because, as we mentioned, it's not just the Premier League. There's lots of movement up and down the country, obviously pretty much every league at the moment. So it's a manic few weeks and months ahead. It's crazy to think there's still 3 months left of the transfer window because it does feel like there's a lot that's happening behind the scenes at the moment. And ordinarily, you tend to find that June is the busiest month in the build-up to pre-season, which will no doubt be back into June.
And very interesting, no doubt.
Fascinating.
Richard, thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away.